Okay, so here we go for this evening's talk. And again, just based on experiences and little things which happened over the last week, I've just been noticing a few articles have appeared, and we've been discussing in our monastery, about the negativity of positive thinking. Because sometimes people have to be so positive, it seems to be, in spiritual life. And if you're not happy after all these years of coming to this center, you must be a loser. And so sometimes the requirement, you know, if you're living a spiritual life, to be positive, and the requirement to always be happy, makes people very tense. And also very upset about themselves, that they can't always be happy. What are they misunderstanding? And is it the case you always have to be so positive about everything which happens in this world? And there has been a movement in spiritual life, not just in Buddhism, but in many religions recently, just to keep positive about everything and just always be happy. And sometimes, as people have pointed out, that goes a bit too far. Or does it? Certainly you can see the dangers in that. And I still remember an extreme example when I was a kid. Anybody who is about my age might remember a TV series called Thunderbirds. And in this TV series called Thunderbirds, it was puppets. And these puppets, they were just fighting some natural disaster or some evil beings. And the only two characters I actually remember were Brains and Lady Penelope, if anyone remembers those. But the thing was, because they were puppets, and this was in the 60s, and this was a time when, you know, the special effects was just so rudimentary, that these puppets, they were always perpetually smiling. And even when the spaceship is going to blow up, Brains. Yes, we're all going to die. And they always had a smile on their face, even when they were going to be shot. And the reason was because they were puppets, and that's how they were made. And it was totally ridiculous that even these desperate things were about to happen to them, and they were smiling because they were just puppets. And any normal person, even any normal well-adjusted puppet, would change the shape of their mouth when they're about to be exploded by some bomb. And it's just the same. That reminded me of sometimes even spiritual life. You're a monk, therefore you almost must have a happy smile, even when people are shouting at you, and even when they're criticizing you because you did bhikkhuni ordination. You have to keep a happy smile on your face. Now you can see that that's an extreme, but we have to be careful here, because sometimes the positivity and the requirement to be happy is just get so extreme, especially, you know, when people sort of really feel miserable sometimes. You know, because life is sometimes like that. Life, sometimes things go wrong and you're having a really rough day, and people don't do the right thing, or, you know, you get a speeding fine. I was told today that this is double demerits on Anzac weekend in Western Australia. So if you go through one red light, one flash and your, what was it called? One flash and your ash. In other words, you lose all of your points and you've lost your license. And so that might have happened to you today. And now you've got to say, I lost my license today. Positive thinking. You know, it's all right to feel miserable, and it's all right to feel upset. And there's just the requirement to be happy. If you come in this room with a miserable smile, a miserable face, you are quite welcome here. So you don't have to be happy, and you don't always have to be positive. Because, you know, life is sometimes like that. Life is sometimes, you know, pretty hard to bear from time to time. And so sometimes the desire to be happiness, the requirement to be positive, often just makes people false. They're not being really truthful. And as far as any spiritual life or religion, anything like Buddhism is concerned, truthfulness and honesty must come above all things. In other words, as I said here last week, you should never bend the truth to fit your beliefs. Rather, you should bend your beliefs to fit the truth. So if you believe, I'm a Buddhist, I must be happy. Then when you're not happy, what are you going to do? You're just going to be in denial and say, yes, I've got to be happy. I've just got cancer. I've just been told I have to do some more chemotherapy. But I've got to be happy. Yuck. Because what that actually does, it means you're not being honest. You're being in denial. And that just creates more suffering, more pain in your life. And of course, that's not what a spiritual life is supposed to be doing. It's supposed to be relieving the pain. So first of all, please be honest to your feelings. If you're really feeling really fed up, just admit it. Admit you're not enlightened yet, you're not fully enlightened. So be yourself, because that's the first step towards enlightenment. That's the first step towards freedom, is to be honest. So sometimes the requirement to be positive and the need to be sort of happy gets in the way of truth, which means it gets in the way of progress on the spiritual path. So number one, we just have to be really, really honest. There's a story I read recently about a man who'd just woken up from his operation, just coming out of anesthetic, and his wife was by his bedside, as you'd expect. And the first thing he said when he opened his eyes and he looked at his wife and said, "My God, you're beautiful." What a wonderful thing to hear from your husband when he just comes out of anesthetic. He closed his eyes, and a minute or two later he opened his eyes a second time and said, "You know, wife, you're cute." She said, "What do you mean, cute? You said I was really beautiful a few moments ago." And he said, "Yes, but now the drugs are wearing off." You've got to be honest, come on. Sometimes the drug... I'm going to get into trouble for that one, I'm sure. So that the drug of sometimes religion or spirituality can sometimes get in the way of truth. It's much better to be honest. But, and this is an important but, when we do experience like the truth of life and it's difficult and it's painful, it doesn't go the way we want, first of all, we admit it. And this is what life is. But then where Buddhism sort of kicks in, you know, honesty, and then we always realize there's always something we can do about this. This is where the law of karma kicks in. Now this is a central part of Buddhism, law of karma. What the law of karma is, it's not looking backwards. I am hurting, I must have done something wrong. You know, I've got sort of, you know, I suffer from hay fever, and I always got sort of an itchy nose, and that must have been in my past life. I must have punched an enlightened being in the nose. And this is why I've got to suffer like this. And sometimes whenever something happens to us, we think, what did I do to deserve this? I must have done something wrong. And you look back in the past, but that is not what we mean by the law of karma in Buddhism. Yeah, that's part of it, but that's not the important part. Law of karma is, yeah, this is what I've got. I have a cancer, I've lost my partner in life. You know, my kid's having trouble, I've lost my job, people are cheating me out of my money, I've just lost my driving license, my car has been stolen, and all these other things which might have happened to you today. Sometimes they all happen in the same day. But whatever, the law of karma says, well, this is where I am. What am I doing about this? And that is a sense of honesty with a little bit of positive thinking. The positive is, what am I going to do about this? The negativity is, oh, what did I do to deserve this? This is really terrible, this is really awful. Poor me, why did this happen to me? What have I done wrong? This is unfair, this is cruel, this life sucks. Now that's a negative thinking. And the real positive thinking is not sort of being in denial to the situation you find yourself in from time to time. It's being truthful to it. You know, you're having a problem. It's a difficult thing to deal with. Where the positive stuff comes in is, What's the strategy to make to do something with this? So you don't wallow in the shit of life. And you make use of it. And you've heard me say this many times, a positive part of life is not being in denial to the truth of the difficulties and problems which we face from time to time. It's actually making use of those difficulties, admitting they're there. Yes, this is difficult sometimes, things don't go the way they should or we want them to go, and it's sometimes even painful. Okay, now what are we going to do about this? So the positive part of it is making use of whatever comes along in life. And of course, you know, if what comes along in life is very pleasant, enjoy it. You know you deserve to have happiness in life. It may sound that a banal thing to say, but many people, they don't allow themselves to be happy when it comes along. They think there must be something wrong, that they're happy. So if happiness comes, enjoy it. But when the pain comes and the difficulties in life comes, then we can make use of it. And I've often found, I think many of you will agree, it's those painful, difficult, problematical times of your life. These are the ones where we really can grow spiritually. This is the coal face of life, where the work is done, where we can really sort of grow in our understanding of what life is all about. The happy times are like holidays. So the painful times is the work of life, the spiritual work of life. It's a fertilizer which we can use, as I've said many times here, the fertilizer which we can use to grow. And so when there is that painful part, we admit, yeah, it's painful, it's difficult. Now how can we make use of this? How can we grow from this? How can we learn from this? And that is a positive. And Buddhism has given me, and hopefully many of you, many, many sort of strategies to make use of the difficult things in life. At the very least, you know, it teaches you that those difficult times of life don't last forever. They change. Now that's an obvious thing, that, you know, this too will pass, the pain doesn't last forever. But many times when you really are in the shit, when things are going very difficult for you, you forget. And because you forget, sometimes you think, I cannot endure this any longer. You know, the pain of the chemotherapy, just the shame of being put in prison, you know, for some crime which anyone could do. Just the loneliness of being abandoned by someone you gave your life to, you loved and married, and now they're gone. So all of that, so the pain, we admit it, but we know it will go, it will pass. It's one of the things which, you know, I have often said when I went to go and visit the prisoners. When you're in jail, it's so shameful. You're called a criminal. You're in the green clothes. You live behind bars. And your freedoms are so heavily restricted. Every morning, every minute of the day, you're reminded that you've done a crime. And it's very shameful being in a jail. People just don't like to admit it. Even my predecessor, Ajahn Jacaro, you know, when he disrobed here, he'd had this big chunk of life, 20 years from his life had disappeared in a monastery. So when he went to the United States and he applied for a job, they thought, what were you doing in those 20 years? I've been a monk. Yeah, we've heard that before. What prison were you in? And so he actually asked me to write him a letter to confirm that no, he didn't go to jail, he was a monk. Because it's a shame to be sort of in prison. But I told many of those people who were in prison, look, you're not in prison forever. The time comes when you walk out, when you're free, when the problem's gone. It does pass. Doesn't matter how many years. It passes, it goes. And it's that type of wisdom which you learn whenever there's a difficulty in life. It's a positive idea that yes, there is pain, there is difficulty, there is tragedy, but you know it will pass. And that teaching of impermanence, of anicca in Buddhism, is powerful. Never underestimate that. And what that means is you are taking a painful experience and you're lessening its sting. You are making it a little bit happier, knowing it's not going to be there forever. And you'll find it actually does disappear. It just disappears gradually as the pain of the past vanishes, because you have these wise attitudes. And it brings, notice this is one example of a strategy, this too will pass. It brings in this great teaching of the Buddha, which when I heard it, this great teaching, I thought this fellow really knew what he's talking about. And it wasn't just, you know, some metaphysical enlightenment which you're going to get a long time down the track and just you're left sort of just wallowing in the truths of life in the meantime. These were strategies and teachings which just made sense, which everybody at every stage of your practice can apply, and that was a great simile of the two arrows. He said that it's like when you're suffering, when you're in pain, when there's a difficulty in your life, there's like two arrows inside you. The physical arrow and the mental arrow. So the physical arrow, you can't do much about. Disappointments happen in life. Sicknesses happen. It doesn't matter just how much brown rice and veggies and exercise you do, you get sick. And as for me, sort of, you know, some of the food I eat is all types of, you know, rubbishy food. Now every morning, now one thing which I really like in my tea is sweetened condensed milk. Or if not that, like long life milk. That's why I'm healthy, because it says long life milk. That's the secret of living a long age. You drink lots of long life milk. It says it on the packet, long life milk. But sickness will come to me. I'm not going to avoid it forever. You know, we all get sick from time to time. So when you get sick, that's the physical arrow. You know, when you lose your job, that's the physical arrow. You know, when sort of something happens to you, people criticize you, that's a physical error. And he says, we're going to accept that. That's part of life. Each one of us will meet that from time to time. And number one, look, it's not your fault. Doesn't matter what you do, you're going to get sick, you're going to lose your job, you can have arguments with your relationship, some of you are going to get divorced, some of your kids are going to just, you know, call you all sorts of terrible names. That's life. It happens. But the mental arrow is just what we add to that with our mind. And I already mentioned one thing, guilt. That's a mental arrow which many of us have. You know, you're in a relationship, it falls apart and you think, what did I do wrong? A lot of time, nothing. You did nothing wrong. It's just, this is what happens with relationships. Sometimes they last, sometimes they don't last. It's not your fault. It's not their fault either. And sometimes it just doesn't work out. The karmic causes aren't there. So don't blame yourself on these things, because the blame is adding another arrow, the mental arrow, to the suffering of life. Or you lose your job. You think, losing my job, why did I get sacked? What did I do wrong? Sometimes nothing wrong, it just happens that sometimes you lose your job. But you don't add that mental arrow of guilt. You don't add the mental arrow of anger either. Someone has cheated you. You know, or sometimes, you know, you did get sort of caught speeding today and double demerit points or whatever else happens today. Now why get angry about that? That just adds another level of suffering onto the problem. And one of the nice things about that teaching, yeah, you've got the physical arrow, that just happens in life. But the mental arrow, that is something which you add on to the problems of life. And it's a mental arrow which, in Buddhism, we try and focus on to make sure we never get hit by that mental arrow to begin with. If we do, we can take it out pretty quickly. So in life, you've only got sort of the physical suffering. We're realistic to that, it exists. We don't have, you know, a sort of a positive sort of denial to the fact that, you know, life sometimes, you know, doesn't work out the way we wanted it. It's very painful and difficult to bear. We accept that, but the mental arrow is what we really work on. So we take out the mental arrows of guilt, of anger when we blame other people. Remember what anger and guilt are? They're just two sides of the same emotion. and two sides depending on where you direct it to. Direct it to yourself. Anger towards yourself is called guilt. Stupid me. Why did I do that? I shouldn't have said that. Why did I keep on doing that? That's anger towards yourself. And you know what? Anger towards another person. It's your fault. Why did you do that? You stupid girl. You bad woman. You bad boy. You bad dog. Why do you keep blaming the dog? The dog's just a dog. That's what dogs do. I mean, they've got to poo somewhere. And if it's in your carpet, well, they don't really know what's going on. It's a nice place to poo, that's all. I remember, like, the cats in our monastery. We've got a couple of cats. And where they like pooing is in sand. Because if you come to our monastery, Bodhinyana Monastery, or down in Serpentine, you know, in there, it's gravel. And no, imagine a cat trying to sort of dig a hole in the gravel to sort of, you know, to do its business. So if it finds any sand somewhere, of course, that's marvellous. That's like a luxury loo for a cat. So it digs under the sand and does its stuff. It buries it afterwards, but the next day when I'm mixing cement with that sand, you get all the cat poo and you have to take it out. That's what happened yesterday. So, but that's, you can't blame the cat. That's just cats being cats. So yeah, it's suffering having to take out the, you know, bits of cat poo from the sand before you make your sort of mortar. But you can blame the cat. That just adds a mental arrow of suffering, getting angry at somebody. So we can always take the mental arrow of suffering out. Physical life is there. This is just what cats are like, what people are like. But the mental arrow, it shouldn't be like this. Getting angry, getting upset, that's something which we can do. And that's where the Buddhist positive thinking really lies. It's not just, you know, being positive about life. Now, this is what the life is. There's always going to be sort of wars. There's always going to be politicians messing around. People who are corrupt in our institutions. There's always going to be sort of people who, you know, rot the system. We try and reduce that as much as we possibly can. But look, this is the human realm. This is not sort of some heaven realm. Yeah, we try and make it the best we can, but this is just people being people. So, you know, this is just what we have to accept, trying to lessen it. But where we can really sort of do something is lessen the mental part of, you know, our problems. You know, always being sort of critical and fault-finding. Being critical and fault-finding doesn't mean that the world is a wonderful place, it's a lovely place, and everybody is beautiful, and Osama bin Laden is just misunderstood, that's all. No, we're being realistic, but we're also understanding that the way we look at life, what we add to life, that is the mental arrow, and that's where we can do something about. And what do? You know, with the problems of life, this is a situation, what type of karma can we make? And bringing in the law of karma here, what do we do with what we've got so we don't add an extra mental arrow? This is where understanding the law of karma is not acting out of greed, hatred, and delusion. These are what call the defilements of the mind, what causes bad karma to happen. So you know what greed is? It's like just, you know, controlling, wanting, desiring what you can never really get. So limiting sort of your greed in life, understanding this is what life is like, you have to just accept this and don't want too much out of life. If those of you who were at the chanting a few moments ago, before we started the meditation, we chanted the Metta Sutta, and it's in English, to be content and easily satisfied, not demanding in nature, were some of the words which were said in that. And those are words which really stand out for me. Because in our modern life, how many of you are content and easily satisfied and not demanding in nature? And the reason why we're not, we watch too many advertisements, too many sort of people think that you can only get on in life if you get more and more and more. And you have to demand things, and you know, don't be so easily satisfied in life, because if you're too easily satisfied, you're not sort of seeking excellence. I know that somebody sort of complained to me about this. What about the pursuit of excellence? You can't just be too content, otherwise you get lazy. You've got to move forward and strive and reach for the heights. Oh, come on, you've been there and done that. It just gets you stressed out. And what do you mean by excellence? For me, excellence is peace of mind. It's this beautiful inner contentment. To me, that's excellence. So yeah, I pursue excellence by not pursuing, by just letting things be and being content and easily satisfied. And look at our situation in our world today, because we demand so much. I often say, look at the big houses which are being built. Please build smaller houses. You don't need such a big house. It's big mortgage, big problems. And again, it separates you from the people who live in the house. Small houses, you're all together. So why do we want big things? Why do we want, you know, big cars? Why do we want sort of designer clothes? Look at my robes. I've got a patch in the back. And that's what I do when I sort of tear the robe. You put a patch in it. Look at my bag. There's so many patches in my bag. One here, one over there. But it's all patches because it's a wonderful sort of example. You know, that actually when I was a kid I had patches in my jeans because I was really poor. And now they're actually fashionable. So, and I had actually tears in my jeans. My mother was really upset when I had patches in my jeans, especially when a police car stopped once and asked me to get in because they thought, you know, I was robbing something or other. I said, no, I'm a student. And that's what you did in those days. Well, it's only a few students. But now it's actually fashionable. You go to the store and actually you get, you know, pre-torn jeans to wear. So, you know, have a few patches in your clothes when you come in here. You know, this is starting a fashion trend. Maybe it actually can start like a Dhammaloka designer label for your clothes. You know, Buddhists with patches in and tears in because they're living simply. But anyway, by that, living simply and just not having a few things, it's been not being demanding in nature. So what we're doing, we're adding this beautiful sense of simplicity as an act of karma. So we don't need very much, we don't want very much. So whatever happens in life, our karmic response is saying, well, I don't need that much. I can live simply. If I lose my job, and if somebody cheats me out of my money, that's okay. I can add this wonderful sense of not wanting and not desiring and being content with little as part of my strategic response to the difficulties of life. And even, you know, you lose a partner. You know, living alone is okay. Living with people is okay. It doesn't really matter whether you're alone or with other people. It's just how you deal with that. And I've often mentioned here, I'm alone many, many hours of my day. I live a very weird life. I'm alone for so many hours in my cave where I meditate. And every Friday afternoon I stand in here in front of 300 or 400 people. I go to extremes of aloneness and being with people. And when you go to overseas, sometimes thousands of people you're talking to. And you're on a camera there and that goes to I don't know how many tens and hundreds of thousands of people. So it's really weird being a monk. One moment you've got no one around, and the next moment you've got everybody around. But it doesn't matter, because you're just content with, you know, being alone or being with people. So when you learn about contentment, not being demanded, that's a love of part of karma. It doesn't matter what happens to you in life. You can always be content. So that way, you're not dependent on things or people being there for your happiness. You've taken out that mental arrow of attachment, demanding, and always having to have things as a crutch for your happiness. When you take out that mental arrow, and you understand the law of karma, well, yeah, I'm with people, that's fine. Yeah, when I'm alone, that's fine. It's adding, taking away the mental arrow of this is wrong, this sucks, this shouldn't be that way. Now that's a type of positive thinking which doesn't being in denial of the situation you're in, but which makes use of it in a positive way to create a less suffering and a more happiness. So you've lost a person who's very dear to you in life. They've died. So what do you do about that? If there is sadness, you accept it, you know it's going to pass, but in the meantime, it's a wonderful learning experience in life that people aren't always going to be here. A good example of this is how I was trained to look at these problems, to learn from them, to grow and become more wise. Ajahn Chah, he'd pick up a glass This is, you know, the cracked glass simile. I haven't done this for a while here, but he pick up a glass and say, can you see the crack in the glass? And I'd look, can you see a crack in the glass, Jenny? And I looked, I couldn't see any crack in the glass. You know, you're crazy, Ajahn Chah. I always thought he was a bit mad. But, you know, that was when I was young. I realized just how smart the fellow was. It was me who was crazy and mad. And he said, I said, oh, I can't see any crack. And he said, oh, yeah, but it's there. It's microscopic. You know, it's there because one day someone's going to drop this or kick it. And that microscopic crack is going to open up and the glass is going to shatter. He said, we call that a fragile glass because it has the potential to break. It's got the microscopic crack already in there. He said, if this glass was made out of plastic, then you could drop it, you could kick it, because it was unbreakable. You wouldn't need to care. He said, just like human beings, each one of you, I'm looking at you now, is cracked. You've got this microscopic crack inside of you called your potential death. You're fragile. If you were permanent, eternal, unable to be broken or hurt, you'd be just like a plastic person. I could kick you, I could curse you, I could throw you around, and you wouldn't hurt. But you're not like that, are you? Each one of you is fragile. You can get sick, you can die, and you can get emotionally bruised. You're just like this cup. You've got microscopic cracks in you. That's why I have to care for you. Why other people have to care for you. Why you have to care for yourself. Because you are fragile. And every time you hurt, every time you get sick, every time you see your own death reflected in the death of someone you loved, it reminds you of your crack. It reminds you why you must care. Why that the relationships you have with people who are your friends or loved ones, you know they're not always going to be there. That's why you care. You know how easy it is to get sick, which is why you care for your health. You know how easy it is to get bruised inside by unkind words or just forgetful gestures. When you know how it hurts, then you know why you should care. Sometimes people ask, why is there not more care and compassion in this world? It's because people don't reflect when they're hurting, or they don't understand the teaching of pain, or what it's there for. The disappointments and the pain of your life are just the reminders about the importance of compassion. Because you all know that if you realize that the person you live with is going to depart tomorrow into death, what would you say to them today? How would you care for them today? It may be tonight. One day it's going to happen. If you realize that one day you're going to get sick, and maybe that's going to be tomorrow, that tomorrow you're going to die, how would you look after yourself today? One day that's going to happen. So we treat every day like it might be our last. And if you can do that to yourself and the people you associate with, what a wonderful, wise and kind person you would become. It's reminding yourself about the cracks of life. You're not in denial. You're not in positive thinking that plastic, a glass will never crack or break. You're never in denial about your fragility or the fact you're vulnerable and you do hurt. And other people hurt as well. You remind yourself of that. And every time there is pain, disappointment, tragedy in your life, it's another reminder how important it is to be compassionate and kind and forgiving and look after one another. And also to be kind, compassionate and look after oneself and be forgiving. So this is how we change our attitudes towards the difficulties and pain of life. Not denying it, keeping it sort of the positive response to the negativities of life. And there we do actually learn and grow from these things. And other people who see us when we do learn and grow say, well, they're a happy person. And they think, you're a happy person. Ajahn Brahm, you're a happy person because you live as a monk. You don't have to live in the world like us. You don't have to worry about getting speeding tickets and struggling to survive and pay the bills. You don't have to worry having a husband, having a wife, having kids. What do you mean? I got a whole bunch of kids at my monastery. The Anagarikas, the monks, you got the nuns down at. Of course, you have the same sort of way. It's interesting if you ever come and stay at a monastery. And actually sort of come and just see. This is like a family, like any other sort of group of people. But you know, the reason, so you know, sometimes people say, oh, Ajahn Brahm, you're happy because you don't have any worries or responsibilities. People think that, you know, just go in the monastery and just sit meditation all day. Now you have your crisis, someone goes a bit crazy, you have to send them to a hospital, somebody goes around with a knife and cuts somebody else. That was a couple of weeks ago. You always like, the monastery is like any other place. I would know that we've really made it and made an impact in our Western world, especially in Australia, when the ABC does their first sitcom of a Buddhist monastery. They haven't done one yet. They've done sort of, you know, in hospitals, in police stations, you know, you've got, I think, The Bill, you've got sort of emergency room. Sort of, you know, Bodhinyana Monastery, or like, you know, obviously they call it monkey business or something like that. And I'd have a sitcom of what happens in the monastery. I could write the script. I've got many ideas which we could actually do. But actually, on that sort of subject, my biggest franchise, if anybody really wants it, if anyone knows anyone in the movie industry, because I said this to somebody last Saturday, sort of, and because I saw this, it was a bit of a steal from a cartoon I saw in a Thai newspaper when I was first a monk. It stopped soon afterwards. It was Super Monk. Now, not Superman, not sort of Iron Man, not sort of Batman, but Super Monk. Because Super Monk was a great character in the cartoon because, you know, he could fly through the air, had all these psychic powers. And so we'd stop, you know, all these great tragedies and terrorist attacks. But in the end, he wouldn't sort of, you know, like sort of, you know, other Superman, throw people in jail. He'd just give them the five precepts and they'd become Buddhist monks and everyone lived happy ever after. It's a wonderful ending, just with a bit of spirituality, but a bit of, you know, of the argy-bargy necessary in movies. So anyone who knows anyone in the movie industry, Super Monk would be a great franchise, something new they haven't seen before. And Buddhist Society gets 10% of the revenues. But how did I get into that, Super Monk? I forget how I got actually into that. But this is just the way we can deal with the difficulties of life. So if they think I'm a super monk, or the monks are super monks, or, you know, the nuns are super nuns, they're just ordinary human beings. But because we practice these teachings, we do experience the difficulties and pains of life like anybody else. There's disappointments, things which don't work out the way, criticisms. But because we've learned how to accept and be honest to the difficulties in life, and to take out the mental arrow, it shouldn't happen, and being sort of negative towards life, but having an understanding that yes, there's something which you can learn from this, something you can grow from this, that suffering becomes our teacher, becomes our motivation to learn, to love, to be wise, to be kind. Because we use this, our happiness levels actually do go up. The mental happiness, even though the body may be in pain. The sense of joy, even though that, you know, things might be falling around you. And even in disasters. For those of you who are old enough or been here coming long enough, it was 1991 we had a big bushfire come through Bodhinyana Monastery. Trees exploding. And I was right there fighting the fire. It was dangerous. It was the hottest day ever recorded in Western Australia that day. 2 weeks later, it exceeded it, but still it's the second hottest day ever recorded in Western Australia when a fire hit our monastery in the bush. I was there at the time. We were evacuated because, you know, after the fire had hit, it was a stupid thing, but the bushfire person said, get out. So we followed the orders and got out and evacuated. And down at the bottom of the Southwest Highway where the news channels were there. So I got interviewed for the evening news. And I always remember that. They asked what had happened, and I was calm and peaceful. And that interviewer rang me a few days later. And she said, like, I can't get you out of my mind. This is what she was saying. Because I've been in this job for a long time, interviewing people, you know, for the news. They're usually tragedies. Someone got killed, a road accident, or this time a bushfire. And he said, you were different. He said, you weren't upset. There was a very frightening, it was life-threatening tragedy. And you were talking as if, you know, nothing had happened. I said, how do you do that? And she was really fascinated that there was a situation you were right in the middle of and you were dealing with this with no pain. As mentioned, the mental arrow, you've taken that out, physical, yeah. At that time, and this is, you know, totally honest, I thought that that monastery had been totally destroyed. Next day we went there, I couldn't believe that it had survived. Even one of the chief fire officer from Perth, he came to inspect, and I still remember him walking past one of the huts, inspecting it, looking underneath it, around it. He was silent. I was just taking him around, and he turned to me afterwards and said, Brahm, this shouldn't be here. It was there. So, you know, it was a miracle. But I always thought that the place would be destroyed. And I remember that evening thinking, just all that hard work. And, you know, Dennis, you remember, just I was the builder. Ajahn Chakra was the fundraiser, but I did most of that building. And I worked really hard. You know, just, you know, harder than any builder would work. And just sleeping out, washing in cold water, because there was no sort of place to bathe for the first weeks in life, first weeks in that monastery. Really working hard, and then it was all destroyed in a couple of hours. I remember just, I mean, that was just something which could devastate people, make them depressed. But because of our training, you thought, well, it's worth doing. Let's do it again tomorrow. And that's just that attitude, I'm not going to let a fire destroy my happiness. And it's just been my, and of course it was there the next day, it was quite a surprise, didn't have to work so hard. But even to this day, I make the statement, and this is something which I live by, don't allow things in the world to control your happiness. It's one of the great insights which I learned from Buddhism, that happiness is totally independent of your health, your sickness, your success in life, your failures in life, people criticizing you, being wealthy, being poor. Happiness is a mental thing. And it's the mental arrow which takes away your happiness, not the physical arrow. So it's something you can take out. Happiness, you can be happy, no matter what you experience in life. Unfortunately, you know, I've been around long enough in Buddhism to see people actually do that. People who should be in great pain physically, and they have got a smile on their face, and they're not puppets from Thunderbirds. They're real people, they're not in denial. I remember one story. You remember, those of you again have been here a long time, Ratana, this Thai girl, who really helped out look our monastery in the early days, one of the close supporters, and she got lung cancer. And in hospital, I think it was King Edward Memorial Hospital, she called me. She just got the diagnosis, the biopsy back. She had lung cancer. It was not curable. Not much point for chemotherapy or radiotherapy. She was going to die. She had four young children. The youngest was about eight or nine at the time, roughly about that. So she called me. So as I was building at the time when I got the message, so I dropped whatever I was doing, got in the car and went to the hospital. And as soon as I went into her room, there was a lady who'd taken out the mental arrow. She was in the room laughing and just, you know, said, well, you know, this is what I want from the funeral and this is what I want to do. And, you know, she was so open about this. It was just a wonderful, refreshing thing to see that there was someone who'd been following these teachings for such a long time and internalized them. And there was a case you just, an hour before, being told you're going to die. And there's no possibility of any with any recovery. And she was so at peace and so happy, laughing and cracking jokes. The joke she said, when you go back to this temple here, please tell all my friends, the Thai ladies, don't come and visit me yet. Come and visit me later, when I'm in my box, she said. That's when they can come and visit me. Laughing, laughing all the time. So, you know, we talked about, you know, the arrangements and everything. And then when I walked out of the room, actually, not the nurse, not the sister, but actually the matron was actually the head nurse was actually waiting for me, this very old nurse. And she said, I'm so glad you've come. Can you come in my room, please? I said, yeah, what? I said, she's in denial. She's not admitting she's going to die. I said, what do you mean? She's just been telling me all the funeral arrangements. No, she's in denial. She's not crying. She's not screaming. She's not upset. And that was a wonderful experience for me, because that was early on in my life here. It's the first time I saw someone just not understanding that this was not denial. This was total acceptance. Taking out the mental error that there was someone in a very painful situation, lung cancer. No, you're going to die. You're going to sort of leave kids. You know, I think the youngest. And she didn't have a partner. She was a single mum. And she took it so beautifully. And I had to explain to the sister, look, this is what Buddhists are like. The really ones which have, you know, understood these teachings. She's taken out the mental error. You know, it's a waste of time crying and screaming about it. Yet it's not usual, but it's not denial. There's a person in a difficult situation who said, let it be. Can't change it. Let's make the most out of this. And she died so beautifully. At the funeral, I remember the doctor saying to us, she died with grace. You know, beautifully, wonderfully. Now that was an example that these things which I say are just not all theory, they actually work. Now this is what we mean by a positive attitude. If there's something you can do to solve the problem, please do it. And you know, this is how I practice. We had clay trucks coming past our monastery a few years ago. That was a problem. And I fought that for years until we, you know, we wore the clay company down, the brick company down. So we won eventually. You know, it's something you could do. So you did do it. If we'd lost, we'd lost. But even in that, I always remember just Ajahn Sujata was my secretary at the time. When it came to Christmas time, he wrote all these Christmas cards wishing well to our opponents in all these court cases. Now that was really a nice thing to do. It was a beautiful thing. That's a Buddhist thing to do. Just because you're having a court case, you know, with a brick company doesn't mean you can't love them and be kind to them and send them Christmas cards. Not through the lawyers, I mean directly, you know, to their addresses. And that was beautiful. I was really proud of him for doing something like that. That was a very nice gesture, very Buddhist. So you can see, even in those situations, you can actually still take out the mental arrow of anger or ill will. That doesn't help. Because whatever's happening, you've got cancer, or you're in a court fight, never allow that situation to take away your happiness. Never allow sickness, death, disappointment to take away your happiness. You can do that. I've seen so many people do that. And the very possibility shows you what happiness truly is. And positive thinking is not about denial. Positive thinking is being realistic to the nature of life, understanding the law of suffering, but understanding that's physical, that's the world. And the main part of suffering is in your mind, the mental reaction you have to life, the mental arrow. You take that out and don't allow sickness to control your happiness. Yeah, you're tired. Yeah, you're weak. You're in pain. I've seen people become happy. I know that myself. It's possible. When you take out the mental arrow, that happiness is possible. And it's not just a fake happiness of the puppets. You're not just putting that smile on because that's what you think you have to do. This is real. It comes from within. The mind is a forerunner of all things, said the Buddha. It's the chief. It's the main thing. And that's what you learn by coming to places like this. And you'll surprise yourself and you'll surprise your friends and relations and other people. The big test when you really find out how much you've learned in a place like this and how much you've understood when you've meditated is when those situations happen and you find you are at peace, you are happy, even though life is going wrong. I'll finish with one of the favorite poems which I read so many years ago when I was a lame Buddhist in England. And it's easy enough to be happy when life goes along like a song. But the one worthwhile is the one who can smile when everything goes all wrong. And you've seen people like that? You can be that person. It's all about learning. When there is pain, acknowledge it. When there is suffering, be honest to it, be truthful to it. And come, what am I going to do about this? And the options of what you can do are immense. You don't need to get negative. You don't need even to be unhappy. You're truthful, you're positive, you're happy, even when there's great pain and suffering. The glass has a crack. Care. Value. Respect. Then you know how to be happy, even when life sucks. Thank you for listening.